100 Word Stories. Hey everybody, 100 Word Stories, weekly challenge, topic family. Let's get right to it. No rambling or blah 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 or crap about coffee. You came here for stories, let's do some stories. First story in the queue, Mick Bordet. Let's see what you got.
100 Word Stories. Family by Mick Bordet. Set in the world of obscurities. Dell knew her grandfather did not have long, days at best, and then she would be alone in the world. Yet she had never felt such a part of a family as she did at that moment. She lifted the box of instruments, everyone linked to a memory from her family's past, and began walking from room to room, selecting one instrument at a time and placing it on a shelf or bookcase, somewhere visible, so that she would see it every time she walked in. Soon, she would be alone. But her family would always be around her. This short was set in the world of obscurities, which is a short story and album of instrumental music, which you can find at my website, mickbordet.com/obscurities.
Isn't the whole world a world of obscurities, of confusion, of madness? I think so. Thank you, Mick. And I'm just looking through. I haven't done a photo of a cat for a while. Without a photo of a cat, how am I going to make the internet go faster, right? All right, let's see. I need to get a photo of a cat. No cats sitting around. Let's see what... Oh, I do have one. Okay, never mind. Whew! Lucky me. This could have been a disaster. This could have been a horrible disaster. But we have a photo of a cat. So we can put that in the show notes so that the internet will go faster. There we go. Okay, who's up next? Now that we've been horribly derailed by my lack of attention. It's not ADD. I'm just, you know, scatterbrained. Serendipity. Serendipity is early? Okay. Let's listen to Serendipity.
Let me introduce you to the family. This is Alan, my husband. And these are my three lovely kids, Patricia, Amy, and Anthony. Why, yes. I know. They're all dead. I slit their throats myself. To be honest, I just couldn't take all the arguments and bickering one moment longer. It's so much more peaceful now. I keep them all together in the bedroom because it's easier to manage the smell and the flies. And it does mean that I can give them all a big soppy kiss goodnight just before I hop into bed. We're such a happy family.
That explains a few things. Ugh. At least I don't go kissing the boxes of ashes on the shelf, right? Thank you, Serendipity. I don't judge. I merely react. Jeffrey? Sure. Okay, let's hear about Jeffrey's family now that we're all opening up here.
Hello, it's Jeffrey Fisher here once again on the 100 Word Stories podcast. As we learned last week, the loss leader of podcasts. Anyway, I'm here with a pair of stories on the topic of family. My first story is called Love the One You're With. When my friend Alma became interested in her lineage, she consulted a local genealogist who created a magnificent family tree for her. Hand-drawn on a large sheet of vellum, the tree started with a sturdy trunk in the mid-1800s, branching again and again until the present generation. I hired the same genealogist to do similar work for my family. I gave him what information I had on my parents and grandparents, and waited for the results. My piece of vellum was very narrow, and the tree on it was a scraggly thing, as though Charlie Brown had used it one Christmas. "What's this?" I exclaimed. "For my research, I'd guess your ancestors didn't care to date strangers. Your family tree doesn't branch much." My second story is called Family Ties. They say you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. Nonsense, I say. When I was young, my parents were so busy they didn't pay much attention to the children. My kid brother, Todd, was very annoying, so I left him lost in the deep woods, then brought home Frankie, whom I liked much better. No one noticed. Later on, I tired of Aunt Mabel's constant criticisms every time I visited her. Now I refer to her caretaker as Aunt Mabel, and we're both happier. Well, maybe the original Mabel isn't happier, but she's beyond caring. Mom and Dad are really starting to get on my nerves. The Bentons, just down the street, seem like they'd be nice parents. And that's it for me for this week. I'll be back next week.
Thank you, Jeffrey. And thank God that you weren't around Los Angeles walking around, because there was this asshole on the road, driving like a maniac, showing off to his friends his new Porsche Carrera GT. Thank goodness he only hit a pole and a tree and killed himself and the passenger that he was showing off to. And no one else was hurt. So thank goodness for that. That's exactly what I think about this Paul Walker guy. Driving around like a maniac, fast and furious, showing off, "Hey, I'm Mr. Big Shot. I'm going to drive around like a maniac around town." Slams into a light pole. Yeah. Way to go, Hollywood. Way to go. Street racing gets people killed. Innocent people killed, sometimes. But hopefully just the driver, who's driving around like a maniac, putting everyone at risk. "Your humble spirit was felt from the start. I'm going to miss you, brother." I'm looking at all these things from his Fast and Furious starts. No one said, "Why don't you drive like a normal person? This isn't fucking Hollywood." You know? I know. That's not what you're supposed to say. Right, let's continue. Now that I've gotten a lot of you to click off and walk away, let's go with Muncie. Let's see what he's calling us this month.
"Greetings, salutations, and whoop-de-whoop, Mechabats. Muncie here, with a story and a new December nickname, the Mechabats, because I think we can all agree that the majority of you are human-sized cyborg bats. Or, if you aren't, that you'd rather be. Who's ready for a story? On Dinner's Mist by Christopher Monroe. I usually work family holidays. I don't have kids, and my extended family's back east, so on Christmas Eve, Thanksgiving, Easter, or any of the other holidays requiring huge family meals, I'll take pity on a coworker and cover their shift. They have children, after all, and deserve to spend Christmas with them. I don't begrudge it, though they're not especially good shifts. Time and a half, though, and it's not like I have other plans for the evening. However, come Halloween, St. Patrick's Day, or any of the other drunken, rowdy douchebag holidays, I'll be expecting the favor returned. Broken Escalator, ChristopherMonroe.blogspot.com, and tweets at Munzee Munzee. Until next week, Mechabats, I bid you fond farewell, because I'm going to write a screenplay about cyborg bats now, and sell it to the Sci-Fi Network. Get me some of that sweet, sweet Sharknado money."
Thank you, Munzee. And Sharknado is on Netflix now, so I won't be watching it. I watched Room 237, which was a documentary about The Shining. Wow! That was a mind-blower. And the things that Kubrick slipped in there and switched, and his giant F.U. to Stephen King in there. Like, You have universe, I have my universe. Yours is in flames. Love it. Also watched a lot of Archer. And I watched... God, what else did I watch? I also read the Bill O'Reilly Killing series. Man! Bill O'Reilly is like a writing killing machine. Dude, killing Lincoln, killing Kennedy, killing Jesus. He killed Caesar just for sport. My God. Dude's a monster. Get him off the air. Get him out there. Killing. Driving around the streets of Los Angeles like a crazy man. Yeah, I know. Too fast, too furious, too soon. Sets itself up. Too cool to wear a seatbelt. Too famous to observe basic street laws. We'll just hand things over to Tom before I stick my third foot in my mouth, shall we?
Hello, night people. Tom here, and I've got four stories. The first story, the music story. Number 9. I heard the topic and bam, Sister Sledge starts looping in my head. We are family. I've got all my sisters and me. We are family. Get up everyone and sing. It came from the age of drill down choruses. Get down, get down, get down, get down, get down tonight. Or celebrate good times, come on. Not like the latter-day power pop 9 days single breath chorus. This is the story of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world, and while she looks so sad in photographs, I absolutely love her when she smiles. Marquettes. I come from an exceedingly long line of breeders. My great-grandfather had 14 children. My grandfather had 12. I grew up in a household of 8 kids, 2 parents, still married, and a grandmother, God rest her soul. I have 27 cousins. I am Uncle Tom to 10 and Great Uncle Tom to 2. Technically, I'm primogender, but my wife and I thought it best not to breed. I come from a very old family. We were functionaries in Romanic Paris, fought at the Battle of Agincourt, and were the first Europeans to navigate down the Mississippi. Story 3. We are family. It's always been the case that the immigrant experience leads to the formation of intentional families. Boomers, by their very nature, are immigrants within their own country. With a driving will, they will travel 1,000 miles for career and personal opportunity for success. The bonds made by proximity prove stronger than blood. My intentional family is 35 years old. We come from Kentucky, Illinois, Ohio, Wisconsin, San Francisco, Fresno. We came to the engine of possibility, Silicon Valley, picked its bones clean, collectively moved north. The first of us is now in a nursing home. I visit her daily. And the last story, a continuation of a well-defined relationship, part 26. That's a half a year. The airship glided beneath an unending carpet of green. Millions of acres of farm nestled in the New Owens Valley. The joke amongst the farmers was this valley would never lose its water to the city. A bit of black humor. For what keeps the water near their land were guns. Very big guns, and lots of them. Each family farm was edged with a line of trees, creating a vastly expanding checkerboard. Doc Proctor was a family physician. He was their family physician. Fate had placed him in this country. It seemed fate had just increased his extended family. We have a new 100th monkey, Julie. Spade broke into the top 70 just behind Beck. Tura leaps over Anima Zeppeletta and is just behind Danny with 110 stories.
Thank you, Tom. You know this Paul Walker guy? He was also in the movie Timeline which was a movie that was based on a Michael Crichton book that was worse than Congo, the laser exploding monkeys with the giant crystals. Yeah. Oh, with the talking power glove monkey, too. Timeline. You know, a lot of movies are worse than the book. It wasn't hard to make a crappy movie of Timeline. Crichton just like, oh, science gone wrong. Bleh. Probably a Peter Mac style shop going there. They probably got 100 books on the shelf. Like, okay, now which authors do we hand this to? Just awful. Awful movie. Awful book. Awful acting. But hey, Too Fast, Too Furious, there were 6 of them. And apparently there was going to be a Jason Statham. Now hey, that's a dude. Vin Diesel, righteous. I know, people don't like The Pacifier. I thought it was cute. Okay? It shows that, yeah, he's a one-dimensional actor, but you know what? He has a soft side. He's a nice Jewish boy. Okay? He's got a soft side. So Vin Diesel's all right. So the world can relax. Vin Diesel is okay. I know, people don't like... I think he's an all right guy. I think he's an all right guy. And he plays Dungeons and Dragons. You know? He's curious. He's imaginative. He wants to get into a role. The role being himself. Or rolling a d20. Okay, that's pathetic. Let's just move on to John Musico, shall we? He's back, and he's too fast, and he's too furious. John Musico.
Village of the Freaks by John Musico. Herbert worked at a fertility clinic where he had been secretly replacing donor sperm with his own for many years. The many freak children in the area kept him on his campaign to improve the gene pool. It was the only fertility clinic in Oklahoma. Young people settled in the area drawn by their birthplace and a social club for the offspring of artificial insemination. What club members didn't realize is that they were all half-siblings. What Herbert didn't know was of this club's existence, nor why he found the twisted faces of the freakish children so unsettlingly familiar.
Oh my God! The freakish twisted faces of the freakish children! Ah! Remember them this coming Christmas. Thank you, John Musico. Coffee. Mm. Coffee and s'mores, Pop-Tarts. There is no better combination. There is no better combination. Okay, you can add in a drop of Tura Bregiano if you want to. If you insist, right now, Tura, sure. Okay, we'll add that, stir it in. Mmm, not bad. Here, have a sip.
Ephraim Smethwick's will left everything to his family. But although Ephraim was well known and loved in the town, a ready companion and support to both high and low, he had never made mention of wife, nor children, nor even brothers or cousins. A productive life and a modest living in old age had left a considerable estate, which his executors considered too large to merely drop in the poor books as an intestacy. At last, they decided to found a bank for the assistance of business in that town, devoting the profits to charitable works. And so Ephraim's will was fulfilled.
Thank you, Tura. Sorry to take a little break there. I heard this meowing coming from the window there, and yep, that's right. Fluffy. Every day coming in, and it's like, okay, here's some treats. I put down the treats, and Tinny was like, huh? What? So she had a few. He's having a good time there, eating up his treats, while Tinny's watching him. Would you like another story? Okay, all right. How about we get Richard in here? Here's Richard.
Good morning, everyone. And for those of you who went out shopping on Black Friday, I should probably wish you all a very happy Black and Blue weekend. My first story this week is the ongoing story of George. This one's called Friends and Family. As they drifted downstream, the sounds of conflict gradually faded. Cold, frightened and wet, George and Emily huddled together for warmth. "Do you have any family?" asked Emily. Did he? George realised he had no memories from before his accident. Not only did he not know where or who he was, he had no idea where he was from, or any memory of friends or family from the time before his ordeal had started. He shook his head. "I don't remember." "How about you?" Emily looked at him, wide-eyed. "I don't remember, either." Would anything ever make sense again? My next story is called Hand Me Down. But what exactly is it? Well, we're not sure. It originally belonged to your great-great-grandmother. It's been handed down through the generations, and now it's yours. I looked dubiously at the old wooden and string affair that I'd inherited. It certainly wasn't worth anything, but I was honour bound to treasure it and pass it on to my own children. If nothing else, I could try to find out what it was supposed to do, so I took it to the local museum, who told me it was a device for weaving hair. It's a family heirloom. And my last story this week is called Nuclear Family. I'm proud to say we are absolutely the typical nuclear family. Happily married, both working, two cars parked outside, and the children nice and evenly spaced in their age ranges. We holiday twice a year, go to church every Sunday, and host the neighbourhood watch committee once a month, tea and biscuits included. Mr. and Mrs. Joe Average, and our bright-eyed 2.4 children, along with Rufus, the family dog. Of course, we had to saw Jessica's legs off, midway above the knee, so we could achieve the magic 0.4, but it was definitely worth it. And that's all for this week. I'll speak to you all soon. Goodbye.
Thank you, Richard. I did a little bit of shopping this weekend, but Friday I went for Thai food because I don't believe in Black Friday. I was driving around in a black blazer. And then yesterday I went to Target just to pick up some groceries and a hot air popper because I want to see if it's all the oil that we use for popping the popcorn that's getting me down. I know, desperate times call for desperate measures. While we're waiting for the results of the hot air popper, how about we play Sing with that mistress and the madam and the yogi and the... Well, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Hey, yogi.
Foreign, Madam, and the White Yogi, a verse novel in progress by Chris Mooney Singh, Chapter 21. In this installment, Margot, brought from the village to Mr. Barhai's home, feels ignored by her husband Yogi, even after the bulk of the lunch guests have left. Meanwhile, she meets her nemesis, Mrs. Barhai, in the kitchen and is confronted by some uncomfortable home truths. After the food, the congregation left. Yogi, still cross-legged on the couch, tried to rise. "Batoji," said Barhai. "Stay there, Yogi. Let us serve you sweetmeats." "Chai, Matai," he barked toward the kitchen. Margot rose up from the sheeted floor, piling a ziggurat of dirty dishes. Margot felt his eyes deflecting hers. Restraint rattled her middle dish. They crashed. "Madam, please, you are a family guest," calling Jyoti the servant. He knew he'd have to neutralize the wife before this yogi was firm in his grasp. Marga refused the servant and toted all stainless steel back to its source. Mrs. Barhai, a multi-handed goddess and shock absorber of her husband's stress, was the right grind mill for his woody grain. She could push and press to juice his sugar cane. Her hands were clubs, her middle bulge a tub. If kitchens worked like wheels, she was the hub and spin of power. She checked her ample self by the rich array of eatables on each shelf and a marble slab where the chai had just been poured. Then this chairwoman of the cutting board said, "Come, Betty," meaning daughter. Margot bowed before her senior, then sat, sighing out loud. Her morning had backfired, with a car banging doors. "Mrs. Yogi! Mrs. Yogi!" The note, a grabbed guitar, and ride to Garda Mukteshwara. She'd heard the kneecap tale from host Bridgepile Chauhan, while window vistas showed floating heads with fodder and dung cake girls returning from storage cones of thatch to light up pulmonary fires with baby strapped to backs, baking hot plate flatbread daubed with buffalo butter churned thick with stick and cord, the regular milkmaid work. Here, cuisine de mine. Again, Margot was glad she had escaped most kitchens. So many slavish lifetimes lost to the Indian woman. "We had heard that you were preaching to the poor," said Mrs. Bahai, "living in the village." Margot corrected, "Teaching a year or two." "So, they are paying for this, Betty?" Mrs. Barhai couldn't fathom why this foreign woman would want to leave her comforts. "Well, not really. Some costs are met. It's mainly voluntary." Mrs. Barhai was stuck inside this puzzle. "So you are having your own home?" "Yes, Adelaide." Margot was getting tired. "And your children?" "All women came to this." "Yes, with their father." "Then Yogiji is not..." A snooping nose, swooping judgments. "Well, he's my husband now." Such conversation went the usual way. She'd been up this dead end many times, banging her head. Divorce here meant taboo. Although in cities there were modern rifts, while burning brides were still the ghosts of shame. Carnivorous, of course, an eater of husbands, she was some praying mantis and knew the nods and sniffs and lady tutting tongues too well. Shameful abandonment, all just for sex. She noted Mrs. Barhai's rolling eyes, the conversation shifting to her son at college nearby in Merritt. Draftsmanship. "Soon we will be looking for a girl." Margot was nodding while wondering how to exit. Yogi was close, but truly far. "Oh, darling, I'm out on a ledge, a woman walking the razor's edge. I need to tell things as they are. How to wake up wifely here. Years as slave and mother had trampled down her lily pad through bad boot husbands and their beer. Her village hut was not so near. Clinging cloth was starting to cook. Could karma let her off the hook? Diamond sweat dripped from each ear. Family? Was it all past? Two little girls she'd let go of, sent away in the name of love? Regret and guilt both breathed aghast. She drank the chai, then rising like a ghost, drifted inside. Yogi was still perched up on the couch and holding court. He was so wrong, she thought, so selfish, over time. Did she exist? Should she lean back into wallflower consciousness? Those men with eyes in the backs of their number one heads refused to see her fractious state of heart, so ready to crack like plate glass with one pebble. She stood and stood, the forehead ghost. Her past had tracked her here and rang the bell of hell. Yogi! She yelled. Oh, come on! We really need to go.
Thank you, Singh. Sorry we got interrupted there. I had to make sure that Fluff was okay. He wanted to wander around, get some treats. Tenny was a little freaked out. And, well, you know Mist. She's a bitch. Someone who isn't a bitch is Julie, and she's got a story for us on the, well, on the subject of family. But then everybody does this week, don't they? I think. Hopefully everyone stuck to 100 words, too, although some folks are getting a little out of hand. I may send out a few notes. So, it's self-policing, but it's what martial law is for.
Hi, guys. It's Julie. This is now take 4. For some reason, I could just not get this right. The word's family. I have the story. I just can't record it. I guess I spent too much time with my family this weekend. So anyway, this is a 100-word story called Okay, So Dominant Genetics Rock. Cheryl Ann barrel-assed up the airport pickup ramp in her huge Sequoia. I had never met her before. Not ever. But she was family, and we knew each other instantly. She's Pop's brother's daughter, after all. Cheryl Ann drove to my hotel. The front desk lady said, "Y'all are sisters, and look and talk the same. Y'all even wave your hands around alike." Cheryl Ann said, "I've never met her before in my life. I found her at the airport." It was true. Cheryl Ann sent me a picture from 15 years back. Mirror images. It's great having a doppelganger. I love having family. Anyway, this is Julie. Shameless plug, my blog is musepalace.wordpress.com, and that's muse, W-S-E. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I will see y'all next week. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Julie. If y'all were too lazy to write all that down, well, guess what? All that's up at the show notes at oneadayuntilthedayidie.com. Yay. Oop, checking, and blah, blah, blah. Just a note from someone. A friendly note. A happy note. Unwrap a month of fun at Benihana. I bet you that Benihana would get boring after about 6 or 7 days. Let's give it a try, shall we? I'll be going to Benihana tonight. And tomorrow night. And for the rest of the month. Even Christmas. If they're closed, I don't care. I'm just going to sit there. One person who won't do such a silly thing is Zach Man. Yes, Zach Man. No, I won't say any of those words that I said before. Instead, I'll just say Zach Man.
It is always scary wondering if a new member of our family will be accepted by the others, said Father. remember what you told me your grandfather told you when your first engagement didn't work out? Asked Dylan.
Next time, get her in the family way, and she'll spend the winter.
I'd hoped he was joking. Oh, do you mean she is?
No, Father.
And how could you not like my fiancé? It's not like we'll be moving here.
Don't be silly.
We really like your fiancé. It's the kitten your mother brought home I am worried about.
Thank you, Zach Mann, and congratulations on being in a family way. You can make up for Paul Walker. Yeah, just... what the hell? What the hell? Really? Just really? Driving around like a maniac. Rex's car gets him and his friend killed. I don't know, just showing off. Really? I mean, yeah, some of us when we were younger, but when you're 40... somebody's going to have to fix that light pole. What a jerk. Oh, I should just cover my tracks and move on to Lizzie. Lizzie, please?
A postcard from overseas arrived in the mail this morning. It had the picture of a mountain. The stamp was smudged and torn on the edges. The mountain was just a mountain, no location disclosed. It was addressed to me, but it had no address on it, only the country and the town. I lived in a large town, so it was surprising that it actually found its way into my hands. It said, "I'm coming home." No signature. I knew he had written it, my brother. At the back, the date was from 6 months ago. I miss him. This was my story for this week. Drop by my blog at lizziegoodcock.blogspot.com and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lizzie, and may they all come home, every one of them. Except the crazy psychopathic murderers. Let's, yeah. Who's up next? Spate! Okay. Finally, the window comes up. I've got the laptop going with Audacity, and then I've got the weekly challenge folder there in the big monitor, and a web browser for when I feel like spacing out and wasting 20 minutes. Man, it's almost 9:30. All right, well, let's continue. I'm not even doing laundry today. So let's go ahead and keep spacing through. So here we go with... who was it? Oh, yeah, Spate.
Hey, this is Spate. My story this week is called Emily's Family. And here it is. On a brilliant sunny day, Emily has tea with her family at the tiny table in the atrium by the library. Brave Mishka the lion bear arrives first and claims the chair of honor. One-eyed Susie and Cowboy Teddy file in behind. Mama Poof and Baby Piff take the last seat together. Emily serves, then has her tea standing. Sammy Snake slithers in late. He hates tea and just wants cookies. The conversation fills with polite niceties. Unaware of the passing whispers and stares, Emily smiles, delighted to be with her stuffed animal family now that she's turned 83.
"83, you say? Wow, that's a lot, Spate. Hopefully there will be more." Unlike Paul Walker. Man, I'm just obsessing like a jerk. Man, that's what I do. I think I can get the audience down below 10. Let's try. Next up is Red Goddess, who... how many words were in this one? This one goes on for miles and miles and miles, man. Okay, here's the deal. Word count, word count, word counter. The link is up in the show notes somewhere. But please, word count your stories. And if your word counter is way off from wordcounter.net, maybe your word counter is broken. I don't know. But really? Really? What's the title of this podcast? There are people who come to me and say, how many words does it have to be? And I'm like, what the shit is wrong with you? I'm looking at the title of the site, 100 Word Stories, right? And how many words does it have to be? Is this all right? I don't know. Use a word counter. I'm just stunned. I can't even answer those questions because you just, if I were there in person, let's say this were a coffee shop, this were a Starbucks, oh God, and we were sitting there, it's like, hey, you're that 100 word stories person. You're that podcaster guy. And I'm like, yeah. So I feel like writing one of those. How many words does it have to be? I mean, it's like hiring a hooker and asking her if she'll have sex with you. I mean, it's just so dumb. Who's buried in Grant's tomb? I mean, these are the kind of things that Groucho would raise an eyebrow and say something funny. Me? No. So now that we have that introduction, it's Red Goddess and her much longer than 100-word story. But it's still good. What should I do, folks? Oh, I know what Thomas thinks I should do, but he can go eat a bag of dicks. But really, what should I do about this? Should I word count every one of them and be persnickety and it takes effort. Or should I just ramble on Sundays and act like a jerk and drive them away? How could you? I've been doing this for weeks. It's perfectly fine. What do you think? Should I just give up? Just call it podcast or stories? Forget the whole 100-word things? I need structure. I need discipline. I don't know about you. You and your wild driving around crazy like some sort of Hollywood jerk in the fit of irony, roaming around, ramming your really expensive car into a tree, destroying a Porsche Carrera GT. That's enough to earn you a ticket to hell. Third circle. The irony, fifth circle. Jerk. And think of all the kids out there who have mimicked his stupidity driving around. Wait, kids already do that. Never mind. Okay, here's Red Goddess.
Damn it! I'm wearing cashmere and it's raining, says the raven here, heiress, as she shakes her orange polka-dot umbrella, her Hermes scarf and bag on the counter while giving Lola two air kisses. Oh, my darling Lola, she sighs in despair. You didn't tell me what the weather was. So despicable. She resembles a tanned Barbie doll in distress. In spite of her dramatic flair, she clicks with Lola. In the oddest way, Lola relates to her. Marabella, the 21-year-old daughter of a fashion mogul from Milan, has been living at the hotel since adolescence. Her parents live separate lives, yet cross continents for family vacations and her birthday. They think these seasonal appearances make up for the parental neglect. Naturally, Marabella gets bored easily with stuff and men, so she buys vintage jewelry and rare paintings at local auctions. She has an affinity to old black and white family portraits. She can imagine herself sitting on her mother's lap and her dad looking adoringly at them. C'est la vie, to yearn or fear the unknown. She often says that at the end of her conversations with Lola and walks away humming, Que sera, sera. She is Lola's Hepburn. She could buy and sell the whole damn place and the restaurants around it if she so desired. She's a daddy's girl with the usual baggage from a wealthy family. She has zero sense of control when it comes to money. This week alone, she bought a brand new hot pink BMW just because she saw it in a commercial. By next week, she'll hate the color with more passion than an angry bull. Lola can't fathom spending money like that on a whim, but she finds it ironic that she can share Mirabella's family pain. And that's Cashmere by Red Goddess. Thank you.
Thank you, whatever your name is this week. Brocaley, John, Relish. I don't know anymore. I don't know anymore. Who are you? And Red Goddess for writing that. Was anyone else involved? Sevi? The other guy? Bonchance? I don't know. My head is full of that Walker. And some dick said, too bad it wasn't Scott Walker. Really? Do you have to drag that shit into it? Really? This was a Hollywood dick, not an East Coast political dick. Come on, get it right. I'm surprised the guy didn't wipe out and kill himself before now. Really? 40? You had to wait till the big 4-0 to do something childish? Holy nuts. I'm 44 and I still act like a jackass. I mean, just hit rewind. Cliff, save me from myself, please.
I've been tracking a family of Sasquatch for the last 3 years. My team and I have identified a couple that we've named Ralph and Alice, and two or three offspring. It's difficult to tell for sure how many because we've never seen them. Our data comes from sightings, questionable footprints, and obscure noises. Hard evidence is difficult or even impossible to find. Some folks say we're crazy to keep looking, but I figure it doesn't matter if they're really out there or not. As long as the university is dumb enough to pay me, I'll keep filing my reports. And here's the second story with the prompt of family. Dad is a former supervillain, whose mind exists as a computer network now. Mom is a robot, one of Dad's assassin drones, who became self-aware and fell in love with him. My sister spends most of her time in the cemetery listening to the dead. I have an uncle from a planet of intelligent squirrels, two cousins who were werewolves, and a pet velociraptor. Sure, I'm not actually related to any of my family, but they love me, and I love them. That's really all it takes. Me? I'm the black sheep of the family. I sell used cars.
Hey, Cliff, I know a deal you can get on a scratch-and-dent Porsche Carrera GT that's available. Thank you, Cliff. I am not going to let it go. I am not going to let it go. Are there any of you still listening? Leave a comment on the site to let folks know. Yeah, I haven't. Okay, you've gone too far. Speaking of going too far, where is Explorer going this week? Let's find out, shall we?
Family by Helen R. Starr. What is your family like? Loving, caring, and giving? Or are they hateful, hurtful, dysfunctional bullies? Perhaps postmodern families are both good and bad. Perhaps bad families just don't know better because they've never seen a normal postmodern family. Perhaps that's the magic of many postmodern families, blending a group of naughty intellects and pure idiots who can bully siblings and still be an angel in your parents' eyes. Keep it coming, love. Family gatherings. Compounds, characteristics, looks, blood, closely related. Postmodern, social, functional, dysfunctional families. Laughing, shouting all the way. Houses blended, extended, nuclear tribes. Keep it coming, love. Remember this. The word family is a thin line between love and hate. I choose to love my family. Even on the days that I hate them, they're all really good. They've all been through a lot. We've all been through a lot. Life's through a lot. The world's going through a lot. Just love your family. You only get one of them in your life. Thank you, and have a very good holiday season with your family, everybody. Be well. Bye-bye.
I spent my holiday there. Jana was at work, but she came home eventually. The cats were here. In fact, there was a third cat, Fluffy. Told you about him. Fluffy orange cat comes by, give him treats, hangs out, then heads out. And that's pretty much it. Oh, no, wait, I went to the store. They're my retail family. Ooh, and then Netflix. I like it quiet. I'm okay on my own. Well, sort of on my own. She's asleep over there. It's okay. Really? Nothing? Okay. People. I choose the peace and quiet. That's what I like. Speaking of peace and quiet, what's Norval Joe up to? I think the harmonica is going to shatter your peace and quiet. 1, 2, 3, go!
Hello, this is Philip Norval Joe Carroll of NorvalJoe.com, and this is my entry for the weekly challenge number 397 with the prompt of family. I have a sore on my tongue and it's making it hard for me to talk. But NaNoWriMo's over and I finished with 100,000 words. We'll see if I can do anything with that later. So I've gone back to editing my NaNoWriMo from 2 years ago, Flypaper Boy, Coming of Age. Well, who cares? Here's my story. The greenhouse was heavy and hot, the glass panels having trapped solar radiation throughout the day. Julie stood, her back to the door, wondering why she was here. A plant with characteristics similar enough to classify it in the Liliaceae family stood alone in its clay pot. Many lilies have vibrantly colored flowers to attract pollinators. Others use scent, which varies from enticingly fragrant to offensively putrid. This nondescript flower uses telepathy to project a sense of failure and need to attract codependent women on whom it would feed. Singularly different, it was given its own genus and species, Telepathicus iteropicus. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Yay, Flypaper Boy! He's come of age. Is there a Flypaper Girl out there? Hopefully she wasn't the passenger. And man, I will not let that go. I will not let that go. Okay, what else? Remember when Martha Ray hopped into a car and just started driving around like a maniac? That's how she died, you know. Really? The truth. The big mouth. Oh, and then who was that? The hot one. Not Rita Hayworth. The really hot one. The one that was hotter than Marilyn Monroe. And she was decapitated in a car crash. Oh, man. That was sad. Because she was hot. And then, that Eddie guy. Eddie. You know, Eddie. Eddie Cantor. Man, that guy was funny, or at least the few surviving bits of kinescope that have survived. That guy was funny. Too bad. And then James Dean. I wouldn't say that this Paul Walker James Deaned himself, because he waited until he was 40. And I guess we see that, well, there wasn't much talent there at all. Well, he could drive, so he could have been a chauffeur. But really, James Dean, there was an actor. Speaking of actor, how about we bring in Justin and see what he's got? Tell us a story, Justin.
Space Turtle. Justin Lomaster here from thespaceturtle.com. My story based on the game Max Payne. When I first played this game, recently set up surround sound on my computer and you could hear the bullets whiz past and hit the tile, which would crash to the ground behind me. It was pretty cool. Max Payne walked into his house, and his gut filled with black ice. A lamp was on the floor, items strewn about the living room. The phone rang. He picked up and shouted for them to call the police, but the caller replied cryptically, as if she knew. A maw opened in his stomach. Then Max heard the scream from upstairs. Max ran up and crashed into the bedroom. Without hesitation, he shot the druggies, but it was already too late. His wife Michelle and his daughter, dead. Nothing left to lose. Max stopped at nothing to find the cause.
Thank you, Justin. Ooh, Max Payne. He was going to be the actor in Max Payne. Not anymore. Although they could digitize him. Just like the video game. Okay, so I've got a few responses here. Surprised at you. Know you are irreverent, but didn't expect flip callousness. No, the card didn't flip. And I don't think he had any calluses. Really? Come on. The dude wasn't James Dean. One more story? Okay. Maybe I should change the next topic to Paul Walker. No. Walker, Texas Ranger. Now that is a series. Wow. I'm going to get a lot of folks unsubscribing, huh? Let me know. Come on. Be passive-aggressive about it. Post it in the comments. Bring it along. Send an email. Send up a tweet. It's about time I went off the rails. Shed a whole bunch of participants and listeners and start from fresh. The ones who are just about the stories. And that's Danny.
Hello, hello. Danny Dwyer is back with this weekly challenge, 397 Family. So here we go. The TV was on all day this past Thanksgiving. Sounds from parades to football games blared over the speakers as our family sat down for traditional dinner. Sometime in the latter part of the afternoon, the TV became eerily silent. The silence was broken only by a lone trumpet playing a melancholy tune, prompting us to stop whatever else was dividing our attention to sit down and watch the Godfather Marathon on AMC. Marlon Brando said it the best. You're not a man unless you spend time with your family. And our family spent the rest of Thanksgiving watching family films.
Blech. I mean, I like The Godfather, but I like watching stuff alone. Well, except for The Walking Dead. That's fun. And that's family, too. A family of undead zombies, numbering in the millions. Too soon? Thank you, Danny. Let's just get this over with. Speaking of family, how about the family out there in other worlds, way, way out there, in a place called Planet Z?
Grandma Parker died last week. Whenever I called her, she always thought I was my older brother. So, I'd say horrible and disgusting things and ask her if she was going to leave me everything. Pretending to be him. She'd hang up. Here, he's here, sitting next to me in Grandma's lawyer's office. He's not named in the will. Neither am I. Turns out nobody is, because the bitch didn't have any money. I just like to fuck with people, said the attorney. My brother lets loose a stream of profanity. At least I got to tell her all that directly.
And that's it for this week on the 100 Word Stories Weekly Challenge on the topic of family. Next week, the topic is blame, although I will not blame you if you take a few weeks or a few months off in disgust. You Too Fast, Too Furious fans, shame on you. I mean, it's not exactly terms of endearment, right? Okay, well, head over to the site, oneadayuntilthedayidie.com, the Twitter, the this, the that. Let me know what you think. And this was a long weekend. We're back to full steam ahead. All of you have had traveling. Hope you travel home safe, because you got to do all that shit a month later. Why can't we spread this crap out, you know? Or do it in decent weather? Ooh, travel delays again this year. Gee, really? Chicago snowed in, the whole traffic patterns are fucked, and you're surprised? We're a stupid, stupid country. I'll see you all next week. Until then, thank you for listening, and as always, keep it brief.